Hello, and welcome to Bible Talk, a show about the Bible, its history, and the people who believe in it. Today's episode, we're focusing more on the people who believe in it than we are the Bible and its history, and we're also doing something a little bit different today. I had an opportunity to moderate a debate between an itinerant preacher and a couple of students who are members of the Secular Student Alliance of the University of Arizona, and what's special about this debate is the content. Dean Saxton, as he likes to go by Brother Dean, is an itinerant preacher who goes around from campus to campus preaching his brand of the gospel. It's very unique. He's no stranger to controversy, and he doesn't have a lot of fans. However, he is passionate about his beliefs. I've come to the conclusion that he is sincere in his beliefs. A lot of people have their doubts about that, but I certainly, by the end of this episode, I hope you'll be convinced too that he is sincere. And his beliefs aren't necessarily in line with his messaging. Now, for those of you who don't know, Brother Dean has made international headlines with his very controversial protests. At the U of A, the University of Arizona alone, he's famous for holding up all sorts of crazy signs that say, you know, you're going to hell. It's probably one of his more tame signs. You deserve rape is the most inflammatory, I think. A lot of signs about Islam as well. And so, yeah, that's kind of what he does. He calls passersby, you know, he'll shout, "You are a whore," at a provocatively, or, you know, arguably provocatively dressed woman. He, you know, will, anyone, he accuses people of, you know, masturbation, calls them, you know, "You are a homo." And he hasn't won a lot of friends this way, but he has got a lot of attention. And today, like I said, we're moderating a debate between him, Brother Dean Saxton, him, and a gentleman named Safia, and a gentleman named Austin from the Secular Student Alliance of the U of A. They want me to make it clear that they in no way represent the views of all Secular Student Alliance members, or even all secular individuals. In fact, they both identify strongly as atheists, nor do they represent all atheists. And at the same time, both parties want me to make clear that just because in the course of this episode you don't hear any overt disagreement between the two parties, that doesn't mean that they didn't disagree. It got to the point where I honestly had to keep things moving along because, you know, usually when you argue premise A leads to, you know, premise B, therefore conclusion, but, you know, they couldn't get halfway through premise A without vehemently disagreeing with one another. So what you are about to listen to is extremely abbreviated, but it should be nonetheless informative. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and let the debaters introduce themselves.
Yes, I'm Brother Dean. I preach on the U of A campus. I also preach at ASU a lot, and I travel. I was here for when the Pope came, preached to a lot of the Catholics there, went to Mardi Gras in New Orleans and preached to the Catholics there, go to the Phoenix Gay Pride, too, coming up. And I just get myself out to a lot of people in general who I can tell through their sin and how they're acting that they don't know God and they don't have God. So I go out there to give them Jesus and make sure that they know that there's no way they're going to heaven without him.
And what's your educational background?
I'm a U of A graduate, a double major in religious studies and classical literature.
Now, my podcast is not renowned for its spectacular recording quality, but for those of you who are my regular listeners, you can tell from that little bit where we heard from Brother Dean that the recording is particularly poor during the interview, and I'm sorry for that. We were in a room not meant for great acoustics, and I only had the one microphone. So here's to getting some more sponsors to, you know, improve our sound quality. But what I want everyone to take away from that is that Brother Dean is, he is trained. He is a religious studies graduate from the University of Arizona. So bear in mind that when Brother Dean talks scripture, he's not talking out of his ass. He does know what he's saying, and he does know what he's talking about. Now, whether or not you agree with his exegesis, his interpretation, his whatever, that's one thing. But to question his credentials and his intellect is another. So without further ado, let's hear from our secular, or should I say, atheist opponents.
My name is Austin Douglas. I'm a chemical engineering senior here at the U of A, so doing my undergrad. I'm also the events coordinator of the U of A Secular Student Alliance chapter. So it's a national organization, and we're the U of A chapter here.
Can you tell me a little bit about the Secular Students Alliance?
Sure. Yeah, the Secular Student Alliance, it's primarily a social group. We aim to provide like a safe space for atheists to discuss a variety of topics related to, you know, everything from politics or science to religion or, you know, psychology. And also just to, you know, give a space for people to feel like they can be themselves.
So that was Austin, but we still need to meet one more person.
Hi, I'm Sathya Lacey. I'm kind of a perpetual student. I'm actually a Pima College student, even though I'm at the U of A Student Alliance, at the U of A SSA. I'm still undeclared, unfortunately, although I tend to end up doing quite a bit of social science type stuff. Did a little bit of anthropology, a little bit of, quite a bit of history, a little bit of religious studies. Currently, I'm on a creative writing kick where I'm doing poetry, nonfiction, fiction writing, and I'm also editor of the Pima College's national award-winning student art and literature magazine, Sanskrit.
And so the stage is set. The first thing I wanted to know, that I assume most of my listeners want to know, is why the signs? Why does he need to go around with such inflammatory signs? What's the point? You know, you can catch more flies with honey than vinegar. So I wanted to know, you know, what his rationale behind having such controversial, such universally reviled signs was. So let's hear from the man himself.
So I started just preaching Bible verses, and then I started preaching with a staff, and then I slowly got into signs, and then signs with a shirt, and then some writing on the Bible, right, you know, tracts and different things like that. I think it's kind of a two-fold thing. You know, when I'm out there, people are taking pictures. I'd rather have something that communicates to other people who are looking at the picture more to them. And then also a sign can just get so much more traction. People can look at it. They think about it. They talk about it. It focuses the people that are around into what they're going to talk about. And so that's kind of the methodology about the sign. The signs are really just to get my message across to a larger amount of people.
So there's currently a change.org petition.
Yes.
I'm sure you're aware of it. It has,
yes,
about 1,500 signatures right now to have you banned from the U of A campus. Stuff like this has, you know, had many people start to suggest, and I'm sure you've heard before, that maybe your messaging is counterintuitive to bringing people, you know, into your faith. How would you respond to that?
Well, there's another change.org petition out there for me too.
Mm-hmm.
And that was while I was a student. I think that these are things that students at the U of A, I guess, feel the need to do, but will in the end not really do anything. Because, you know, free speech is, mm-hmm, you know, trumps what their concept of hate speech is. You know,
mm-hmm,
to me, there's no real such thing as hate speech, because we do have free speech.
And that takes us right into the heart of what was perhaps the most controversial aspect of the debate. This concept of free speech versus harassment. When does it begin? When does it end? When is your message going too far? So let's hear from Sathya about that.
Line that I think that Brother Dean crosses is that of harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely, I think, possibly a fuzzier line, not because it's fuzzier morally, but because it's fuzzier, like, defined, like, legally.
And how do you define harassment?
I'm honestly not sure. I don't know if I have the like the legal skills to kind of like go and here's.
But on a personal level, how would you define harassment?
Like, for example, what I consider inappropriate on a social level, I'm going to put aside, like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
putting aside free speech, I would consider it inappropriate to, as people are passing, when they're not basically engaging you, when you're not in a space that's basically defined where, like, you can go. Like, for example, we've got the little...
The hill.
That's kind of, like, traditionally been a place where itinerant preachers come and basically give their spiel and stuff like that. And people who want to be exposed to that can then go to that. When someone is just walking, basically minding their own business, having epithets screamed at them
mm-hmm.
as they're passing, I definitely think that's harassment. And do I think there should be legal penalties for that? No. Do I think that a person should be basically restricted from doing that? And, you know, like, for example, on a college campus? Very possibly, because this is, among other things, an institution of learning. And if you are hampering people's learning process because of that, then I would say that would be a problem.
So I went ahead and, you know, I asked Sathya what behaviors of Brother Dean's, you know, he thought crossed that line. And this is what he had to say about that.
For example, this is basically a firsthand account from a friend of mine. She was in the Day of the Dead parade, and she was there with her teenage daughters, and apparently Brother Dean was screaming. And I'm not interested in repeating his statements, but basically screaming gender-based insults at them.
Could you, for the sake of... you know, our listeners knowing what was happening, could you go a little more into without necessarily repeating them?
I will absolutely let Dean speak in his own words.
So
if he wants to say what the sort of things he likes to say to young women who he thinks are behaving inappropriately or dressed inappropriately in his view, if he wants to repeat those words, those phrases, that is up to him.
So at this point, we're maybe 10 minutes into the debate, and you can already see just how contentious it's getting. So, you know, after everyone calmed down a little bit, I went ahead and asked Brother Dean to relay what some of those words, in his opinion, he think they might have been that he said.
Well, I mean, to me, inflammatory is different from what other people would think. But, you know, if a woman is, you know, acting in a way that's loose or immodest or anything, you know, to me that's characteristics of a whore.
Okay, and you call them as such?
Well, I don't directly call people different things right off the bat.
You know, you don't pick them out as individuals?
Yeah,
like,
no.
You whore.
Typically, I would say all the time I'm talking in general statements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's certain types of women out here. I think, you know, there's certain areas where there's different types of sinners.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, at a gay pride, I'd be talking about homosexuals
mm-hmm.
or queers or...
So it's not difficult to tell that Brother Dean is a man who's very comfortable with language that may or may not be considered PC. But what was interesting was, you know, talking to him further to elaborate that point, he talked about how a lot of people in the crowd, they would seem to own those labels. So, you know, he would shout, you know, do we have any whores? And you would have people, you know, jumping up and screaming like, yeah, you know, to sort of devalue or de-escalate the insult that he was throwing out to the crowd. So I asked him what he thought about that, if he thought that was, you know, beneficial to his message or counterintuitive. And this is what he had to say.
To me, it helps me and my audience realize what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the people that I'm preaching to are evil, they're wicked, and they're not right with God. God demands more, and they're siding for less.
After a brief discussion about sexism, where Brother Dean assured us that he has plenty of insults for men as well as women, the conversation went back to harassment. And surprisingly, this time, it was Austin who jumped to Dean's defense.
Yeah, I don't think saying something, shouting something at someone as they're walking by is harassment. I can understand how it might be offensive. However, if you can't handle, like, you hearing 2 seconds of something that you find offensive as you're walking by, I think that's more of a personal problem. I'm sure Sathya disagrees with me here. Not that I agree with the message, but, like, if you're walking by and you hear someone shout at you, oh, you're a whore, you just, you know, you're on a college campus, you're out in the world, you're gonna hear things that you disagree with, and you just kind of have to suck it up, buttercup.
So, all right, this is all very interesting, you know, but what is harassment? What isn't harassment? Where's the line? You know, these are interesting questions, but ultimately, look, this isn't a legal podcast. If you want to learn more about the law, I recommend checking out a blog called Pope Hat. But I suspect strongly that most of you heard that there was a Christian man running around with a sign that says, "You deserve rape," and you want to know what's going on there. And that's what I wanted to know, and, you know, frankly, I think that's why this episode has gotten so much attention, and, you know, so much curiosity, so I'm just going to get right to it. I asked Dean, I said, you know, what's up with the sign, and this is what he had to say.
Sin, in general, is a slippery slope. You know, so in the same way that sin is, you know, a woman or man who starts to entertain certain thoughts or ideas, they start dressing immodestly, they start going to parties, drinking a little bit of alcohol. Eventually, certain things are going to come out of that kind of lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
STDs, broken heart and liver, damage, and, you know, friends that just hang out with them when they do that. And, you know, ultimately, you know, possibly sexual assault or harassment.
And now a clearer picture emerges. He's not saying that, you know, you deserve to go get raped or you don't deserve protection against rape. What he's saying is that your lifestyle will ultimately lead to rape. Now, whether or not that's a valid statement is one thing, and whether or not it's said in the most artful way is another. But what is interesting, and you will see this later, is Dean does have some interesting views on rape, and not in the way that you probably think they are. But first, I want to get to Safia's response to this argument. And he, you know, makes a little metaphor to kind of try and tease out what he thinks is wrong with this statement.
Do people who drive cars deserve to be in car accidents, die in car accidents? Because that is a risk. That is a known risk. It is a very high risk. It is, in fact, one of the biggest risks we, in modern life, expose ourselves to on a regular basis. We drive cars and die in car accidents. Do people who do that... By the way, you use the word deserve, which I, like, generally, I don't believe in deserve anything. Like, that's...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than, like, you know, like, I paid for my sandwich, I deserve my sandwich, like, maybe the social contract type stuff, and you use a different word, which is invite. I'm actually not sure, but when you say invite certain behavior, the thing is, life is risk.
You know, after that, Austin weighed in with something pretty interesting regarding specifically the STD aspect of Dean's argument. It's something that took me a little bit by surprise, even from a secular perspective. I would say it's probably difficult to swallow, but, you know, it is something that I hadn't heard before, and it was interesting, so I want you guys to check that out.
I don't really think there's anything particularly unique about sexually transmitted infections. HIV/AIDS is a particularly deadly one, but there are plenty of diseases and infections in the world that you can catch by doing all manner of behavior. And we like to focus on sexually transmitted infections as like some sort of special moral class of disease and infection.
And that's because...
worse disease.
Yeah, when really it's just there are pathogens in the world that will get to you one way or another. You could, you know, walk down the street and catch the flu and no one really thinks of that as a moral issue.
Yeah,
when going around, you know, in life, like Sathya was saying, life is risk. You take risks, and maybe you'll say, oh, but, you know, having unprotected sex or having sex with multiple partners is inviting unnecessary risk. Like, everyone has to walk down the street and you just have to accept that, but you don't have to have sex with multiple partners. But that kind of ignores the idea that there are precautions that can be taken to drastically reduce that.
Mm-hmm.
And it ignores the positive powers of human sexuality. Like, sex is an important and a powerful tool for bond making, for example, between people. And I, for one, I definitely don't believe in this idea of, like, reserved sex for marriage.
At this point, Dean's head was shaking so hard and so fast, I thought it was actually going to fall off of his neck. But we did move past this. We started talking about, you know, the sort of ethical obligations
in regards to sex. Sathya, obviously, he took a very egalitarian sort of libertarian approach. You know, as long as everyone's consenting, everyone's aware of everything, everything's fine. Austin, again, kind of surprised me with his view on human sexuality.
And I think this is going to be an unpopular view to have, but I think if you're willing to just to have sex with any random person with no emotional attachment, I think in my eyes, I think that kind of devalues the idea of using sex as a bond-making tool and as a way of investing a deep level of trust in people. That's just the way I view it.
So we start talking about, you know, Dean's slippery slope, and, you know, I was trying to get to the bottom of this. Austin, how much sex is enough sex? And I asked the same question of Sathya. And they both kind of agreed you can have too much sex at the point where you and your partner start to say, all right, the amount of sex we're having or are allowing ourselves to have with other people or just ourselves is starting to devalue sex for us. So maybe Austin's view wasn't quite as inflammatory or unpopular as he initially thought. But what we started talking about as a result of this, you know, sort of sex and its responsibilities, we started talking about consent. And Brother Dean had some interesting things to say about consent. It's interesting to listen to this because, you know, you're probably going to wind up nodding your head a little bit. And you're going to be like, wow, you know, what a surprisingly progressive view. But I guarantee you at some point the brakes of the train will screech to a halt, much as they did in the room when we were having this discussion. But, you know, I'll have you listen for yourself.
Just because you necessarily give somebody consent or you consent for something doesn't, you know, to me, the line of consent can be a scary thing because a lot of different people don't know all the consequences or the results.
A surprisingly progressive view.
And then two, a lot of, especially U of A students I found, are very easily manipulated into things that they never actually, you know, they say yes, but they didn't really want, you know, all the different things. But I think ultimately, you know...
And would you consider that rape then?
What?
Yes. So
that's a piece of it. And there's
that kind of adds a new dimension to your you deserve rape sign.
I think that there's a lot of dimensions that nobody really listens to about the rape sign that come with it.
So now we get to hear Dean's view of sex.
First I want to talk about what I believe sex to be, and then I'll go into the different dynamics of the rape sign. And I won't be able to touch all of them. I try to touch many of them on my website. But first off, I would say that I believe, as a Christian man, that sex can only be attained in a committed relationship, in a marriage, between one man and one woman, and then for the rest of their life. So
that's part of your definition of consent?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so because I believe that a woman is, she is her father's property until she gets married to her husband. So her, you know, going around to different guys or even, you know, is violating property rights.
What if she has her father's permission?
Well, I mean, that, to me, that's a bad father. That's a, you know.
But his property rights aren't violated.
No, they are. He just is okay with it.
Okay. That's interesting.
So, you know, so you can be robbed and you can think that it's okay, but you were still robbed.
Well, if I give someone my property willingly, it's pretty hard to make a case that I was robbed. I mean, I guess I could be conned into, deceived into giving up my property.
Yeah, no, I think that many, and I think to go along that, many parents are deceived. They, you know,
okay.
I see it all the time. These parents come with their daughters, and their daughters are dressed up like complete whores on this campus, and it's like the dad, the mom is just completely okay with parading their daughter, supposedly their gem, the you know, the woman that they raised to be a virtuous woman or whatever they thought, they think, or whatever. But, you know, they bring her to this campus, and I mean, this campus destroys women.
Well, if you're anything like me, in the back of your head right now, you're thinking something along the lines that sounds probably like, right, something like that. But, you know, he did go on to make some interesting points, especially about the campus destroying women. We started talking about, you know, sexual assault statistics. It's unarguable that at college campuses all over the nation, sexual assault is an incredibly prevalent problem. Dean believes that, you know, sororities, fraternities, they're a big part of it. Again, it's kind of hard to argue with. To a certain extent, both Safia and Austin agreed at, you know, my college campus alone, the majority of the fraternities have either been, you know, kicked off or are suspended pending some sort of sexual assault investigation. And that's kind of, you know, sort of what Dean was getting at there. However, his, you know, his views of property rights are obviously, you know, completely incompatible with, you know, our current Western social values. However, his ideas of consent as being a nuanced thing was actually, you know, very thought-provoking for all of us in the room. We started talking about, you know, a lot of other things that maybe people don't necessarily think about or think of as wrong. And Safia pointed something out.
For a second, like, Dean was almost sounding to sound like he was saying something reasonable about consent, but then he veered off. I do think that... I don't think the problem...
What was the reasonable part before he...
I can't remember the exact words, but he was saying things to the effect of that he's troubled by blurred lines of consent and stuff like that. So,
which is an issue prevalent on campus today.
But I think different things blur it for Dean than for
exactly.
us.
Yeah,
okay.
And obviously you're not going to find any agreement with us. Like, we don't obviously don't believe women are property of their fathers.
Not at all.
Although it's interesting that he brings it up, and it's fun that he brings it up because, and as a little completely side derivation, when conservative politicians in America talk about traditional marriage, it's kind of infuriating when they create this idea of, like, traditional biblical marriage, you know, one man, one woman for life. I'm like, but that's not what's in the Bible. That is, there are bunches of different kinds of marriage in the Bible, and there's many memes on the internet you can find where it's like, one man, one woman, one dead brother, this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, mm-hmm. and or one man and a whole bunch of wives. It's like, so it's kind of humorous to hear Dean actually mentioning what for many centuries in Western, specifically culture, was that basically a marriage is essentially like a contract between a father and a future son-in-law, and it is a property transaction. That for a long time was traditional marriage. So conservatives trying to say we need to go back to traditional marriage. It's like, really? You want to go back to that?
Now, obviously, for most of my listeners, you can probably tell, you know, what's sort of wrong with Safia's view of biblical marriage there. He's, of course, describing the fact that different types of marriages are described in the Bible while ignoring the types of marriages that are prescribed by the Bible, and that's a very important distinction. However, his point is well taken, especially considering the fact that what's at stake is the idea that Dean is counterintuitive to Christianity and not actually successfully promoting Christian values. So, you know, I asked him point blank. I said we were having an interesting discussion on Christian values, on consent. You talk about this idea of property rights, probably not necessary to prove your point about consent being a blurred line, and instantly derailed the conversation. So I said, you know, Dean, how do you account for this? How can you possibly argue that this is productive? And this is what he had to say.
It is, to me, there are foundational, fundamental truths of the gospel that pertain to sound doctrine of sober thinking, intelligent thinking. I think that, putting women in their place, their rightful place in society, is what we need to do.
What is that place?
I believe what the Bible says about women. And that is that they should be keepers of the home, they should be quiet, they should be modest, discreet, and obedient to their husbands. Titus 2.
This, of course, got us almost nowhere, as Austin immediately responded with, you know,
pretty much what every Christian dreads hearing from a secular authority about the Bible.
Well, I think that's just a really good reason why you should not cleave to the morality of 2,000 years ago and why you shouldn't read the Bible as, like, your guiding moral principles or your guiding scientific principles. Sure, it may say it in the Bible, but lots of books say lots of things. There's no particular reason to think that this particular book has anything, any special qualities about it.
And that, I think, is as good of a stopping point as any. Now, this is just only part one of two of this debate. Next time, we're going to look into some interesting accusations that perhaps Brother Dean uses scripture to justify, you know, whatever worldview he has, you know, sort of Augustine's argument that, you know, he doesn't believe in scripture. What he believes in is himself, and he's using scripture to sort of justify those beliefs. We're also going to learn more about, you know, how Dean came to be Dean. You'd be surprised. You will be surprised. He wasn't always so extreme. And he was actually converted by a preacher very similar to himself. So we'll hear about that story. And we'll also hear an interesting sort of interpretation regarding homosexuality, you know, different sort of other biblical crimes, according to Dean, on how he thinks those should be dealt with. And we'll obviously hear the responses to those. Anyway, as always, thank you for listening. I hope you all have a great day, and make sure to tune in next time, because if you thought this episode was good, just wait until you hear what you hear next episode. Thanks again, and bye-bye.